next order.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again to the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. My name is JD. I hope so, because I'm wearing his underwear today. Anyway, today is the 12th day of March. Man, I can't believe we're almost halfway through March already. Can you guys believe it? It is Thursday. It is fairly nice outside. That's pretty much all I've got from the home front this morning. I hope you guys are having a good day so far. If it is morning or evening or whatever it is to wherever you are, thank you guys for tuning in once again. Cannot tell you guys how stoked I am to be part of the Truth Frequency movement. And just can't tell you guys how much I appreciate you guys being in the chat room in the morning. It's nice to see a bunch of familiar faces in there. Of course, if you guys are new listeners, we are live right now. We do this every day, Monday through Friday, and you can go to Truth Frequency Radio and hop into the chat room. It's a great way to meet other guests, other listeners. And I'll tell you what, Kev Baker is in the chat room right now. So if you want to chat with him, that is a great place to do it. His show is absolutely one of the best here at Truth Frequency. And I'll tell you what, Truth Frequency is blowing up these days. We're bringing hosts from all over the world. I think people are really excited about the fact that there is a team of people out here that actually work together. It's not this whole political, my guests are my guests and you can't have them kind of thing. No, it's this whole thing is one huge, ginormous team. And just to be a part of it is absolutely amazing. To be even in the same chat room with Kev Baker is like a high watermark on my life. So all of you in the chat room with him should feel very lucky. Anyway, just super stoked to be part of this whole thing, and also very excited to be bringing Chris and Sheree Geo onto the program today. They're going to be our guests in the second hour, and we're going to be talking about all kinds of stuff. They are pretty much a wealth of knowledge on any kind of issue that you could possibly bring up, from geopolitics to the occult to economics to what's going on. Hey, no, I'm serious, Kevin. Don't think I'm BSing you here, buddy. Love you, man. Love you. Love you. All the things that all the hosts do to support one another around here. But anyway, without Chris and Sheree Geo, we wouldn't be here doing any of this stuff. So we want to bring them on the show, find out what's going on with the network, what the plans for the future are. A lot of people probably don't know. They just moved. They just had a big move in their life. So we'll talk a little bit about that, plus some pending legislation, current events. Who knows where it's going to go, but it'll be a good time talking to them this afternoon. And then tomorrow's guest, just to give you guys a heads up, Xavient Hayes is going to be joining us. It'll be a classic Friday show here at Truth Frequency Radio on the Red Pill Reports. We're going to be talking about aliens in ancient Egypt. We've already had L.A. Marzulli on, and we've talked quite a bit about the Anunnaki culture that's been over there. But, the other side of that coin is that although the biblical account could be correct, the biblical account could be talking about aliens, and it certainly goes into the Vedic texts and stuff like that. Anyway, Xavient has written a great book called Aliens in Ancient Egypt, and I really want to get into that tomorrow, so do stay tuned for that. I hope you guys enjoyed Rebecca Ross' program yesterday. I want to go back just for a second and let you guys know that I am, after speaking with her for a couple of days and after reading the book cover to cover, I got to tell you, the final nail that's going to go into the 9/11 coffin, interestingly enough, is going to be hammered in by a retired flight attendant. And I'm not saying that lightly. Some of the information that she has disclosed to me off of air that she was literally just coming into in the last 48 hours is... Whew, I want to say it's going to rewrite the script for 9/11, but it really can't because what she's actually discovered was the script for 9/11. And I'm not joking about that. So I really recommend, again, Methodical Illusion was her website, and that is also the name of her book. If you've got gift seasons coming up, I don't care what you need to get them for. If you've got people in your life who are still on the fence about 9/11, this is a very gentle nudge through that doorway, that the way that she has written this book. And I tell you, all the information in it is dead on accurate. So I really think that's 9/11 issue, you know, even though it's been a number of years, still incredibly, incredibly important. You know, we're watching this disclosure happening on television with the talking heads all basically coming out. Oh, she's going to be on Kevin Baker's show real soon too, Rebecca Roth. So we'll keep you guys in the loop when she's going to be on there. Man, that's going to be a good show. Because again, she was coming into information just in the last 24 hours that she wasn't able to vet before coming onto the program here. So man, Rebecca Roth is going places whether she likes it or not, ladies and gentlemen. And I really recommend getting that book into the hands of people who need to be swayed on this 9/11 issue. Because as I was about to say, this disclosure on television with the talking heads all coming out saying, oh, by the way, I kind of fabricated all of this stuff. It really, you got to step back now and say, okay, what else have these people sensationalized? What else have they fabricated? How much of this 9/11 story could have just been about marketing and advertising and getting the things done that they were trying to get accomplished? And I'll tell you, when you really step back and look at the big picture, the things that they accomplished during 9/11 were staggering. Most people don't understand the gold heist that took place that day. There was a massive quantity of gold underneath one of the towers that it was a gold heist, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, that's really fundamentally the entire thing was an experimental process to see how much they could get away with and how badly they could snowball the American people. And they've got, you know, most people convinced that in 2001 you could use a cell phone on an airplane. And that's a difficult thing to do. That's a lie told very largely and over and over and over and over again, just as Hitler would have done it. So I'm really thinking, though, with some of the stuff that she's talking about and the potential of a new book coming out, that this could be it. We really are starting to see some pretty amazing things that Rebecca Roth's going to have coming out. So hopefully she'll talk quite a bit about that on the Kev Baker show. And Kev, let me know when that show is going to be, and we'll definitely plug it because I will be tuning in for one. Anyways, okay, let's get on track. First hour of the show, we got a lot of news to cover. As per usual, if you guys go to redpillreports.com, check out the show section there at the top of the page. You'll be able to find out all about the guests. Obviously, Chris and Cherie Geo probably don't need too much of a introduction, but they do have a show over on GCN. A lot of people probably don't know that as well. So, again, you know, there's always stuff we can find out about people. And then below, all the information about Chris and Cherie Geo will be all the news that we aggregated from around the world. And we're going to jump into that right now because there is some international stuff. It's been a really busy 24 hours. I got to tell you, nationally here in the United States, there was a police shooting last night or early this morning. I think just after midnight this morning in the Ferguson area. There's been a lot of developments in the Ferguson area just in the last 48 hours to probably 36 hours. So we'll have to talk about that. But let me blow through some international news right now because I do have some international listeners. I want to say a special hello to Miss Borjo out there in Korea listening now all the time and appreciate that. And of course, Kevin joining us all the way from the UK. Kevin, are you Scottish? Do you actually live in Scotland? Is that way? I had a friend listen to your show the other day and they could not get over how absolutely awesome your accent is. I'm just saying it just because I'm on the radio and I got nothing else to talk about. Okay. Let's get on track. We'll get serious. It's Thursday, serious mode. Here we go. Canada. This is a big news for the Canadian listeners out there. Just said on Wednesday, as of yesterday, Glasgow, Scotland. Roger that. Kev Baker from Glasgow, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin said on Wednesday that it had foiled a plot by a self-proclaimed Islamic State supporter to bomb the U.S. consulate and other buildings in Toronto's financial district. I want you to listen to the wording of this article. This came out on investing.com and it is from Reuters. So just bear that in mind. But listen, again, we talk about nurtured events here in the United States all the time. It would not surprise me to find more nurtured events in Canada either, or the UK, or pretty much any place else where these events and this fictitious war on terror is still unfolding. And I just want to point out again that intelligence communities gather intelligence. They don't make arrests. That's not what intelligence communities do. They follow people around and figure out the bigger picture. That's the name of the game. So when you start seeing stories about intelligence operatives working with self-proclaimed, you know, jihadist radicalist, well, there's a reason. There's a reason there. So anyway, this alleged plot came to light after this man, who was from Pakistan, who has lived in Canada since 2004, tried to recruit an undercover Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer. So again, this guy apparently, in this first paragraph, is said to have allegedly tried to recruit an undercover Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer. The gentleman's name is Jahenzeb Malik. He was arrested Monday by the Canada Border Service Agency, and he appeared at a deportation hearing on Wednesday. This is also interesting. So apparently uncovered this plot to bomb the U.S. consulate and also some other buildings in financial district there in downtown Toronto. What are they trying to do with him right now? Well, they're trying to deport him. There's no charges being pending here. Again, trying to deport him. Hey, thank you, Dee, for the compliment on yesterday's show. It was all Rebecca Roth. I'll tell you, she is one super fine researcher when it comes to 9/11, and what a unique perspective. Okay, getting back to this Canadian story. When they asked what stage the plot was in, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police clearly indicated that this individual was willing to commit a terrorist attack on Canadian soil. So Malik, this is where it gets interesting. Now, this next paragraph says Malik was befriended by the undercover RCMP officer during a long investigation into the activities of the former student. So, okay, now we see that there's been an investigation into this Malik guy, right, for a long time, according to this article. They have a record of him traveling to Pakistan. They've also allegedly believe that he went to combat training in Libya. Okay, they haven't proven any of this in court, but here we go. So, again, this first paragraph says pretty specifically that he went out of his way to try and recruit this Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer. So why were they in contact in the first place? Well, it was because in this fourth paragraph here, they indicate that Malik was befriended by the undercover RCMP. So, okay, they knew this guy had a track record of being a little, you know what I mean, wanting to go to, you know, he potentially could be a radical nut job. You got to leave that on the table. But what do we do with the radical goofballs that are out there? Well, we befriend them, right? And then we encourage them to potentially develop some sort of plot against the state. And then we foil said plot to, you know, much joy and rejoicing. Then we're the heroes, right? Except I don't know if that's what's going on in Canada because I don't live in Canada. But that's what's going on in the United States with the FBI. So I'm just going on a limb here and saying, here we have indication that they've got records of this guy. He's been there since 2004. So 9 years that he's been there, right? Records that he's been to Pakistan, allegations that he's done combat training in Libya, which means we already paid for it. So, you know, now we know that he's been trained by the United States in Libya. And, what are we going to do with this guy? Now they want to deport him. But the fact that they approached him, befriended him during an investigation into him should not, I mean, this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody out there. I read this and I just think, okay, we're ramping up the fear. We're keeping the fear alive. There's more indications in this article talking about the lone wolf Canadian converts, you know, to Islam and blah, blah, blah. But again, nurtured event here going on in Canada. Canada set up a dude and then foiled said dude in this, U.S. consulate potential attack. That's what happened in Canada, according to investing.com. And that's what I believe. At least that's just my conjecture on it. Another nurtured event. Why, if these guys are really, really serious about actually taking action and carrying out bombing attacks, they're not going to just befriend some undercover, you know, agent. These guys aren't that stupid. And if they are that stupid, well, then that's where you would have a nurtured event come in because they're not. I'm sorry, but that's just too ridiculous to me. Okay. NATO's up in arms right now because the European Union, essentially came out earlier this week, and is trying to push for the establishment of an EU-wide army. And so NATO is saying, you know, what are you guys talking about? This is silly. We'll have a whole bunch of overlap and blah, blah, blah. But, EU basically, the EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, he was talking to the German newspaper on Sunday when he espoused this idea, and he says that an army like this would help us better coordinate our foreign and defense policies and to collectively take on Europe's responsibilities in the world. And so the U.S. Supreme Commander of NATO, Breedlove, he said he is not really concerned about Juncker's comments, but he also stressed the need to smartly invest and to avoid duplication. So I would imagine, I mean, is there infighting going on between NATO and the EU right now? Are there members of the NATO state or maybe members of the EU state that doesn't like the fact that NATO is dragging the rest of Europe into war with Russia? Is that where this is coming from? And the fact that it's being introduced by Germany, is there a little undercurrent of in stuff going on here right now? Oh, news on the training. Somebody's asking me in the chat room about the training helicopter that went down yesterday. I will get to that in the national news. There is a little bit more. As of last night when I read the article, they had not released any names because they were still pending, release of information to next of kin. But there was a very tragic, helicopter downing off of the coast of Pensacola, if I'm not mistaken. And it was, National Guard troops as well as some special ops troops from a different thing. I need to, go back and read that. Let me get through a few more articles, PRC, and I'll get over to that in a minute. Okay. So anyway, infighting between NATO and EU. I'm just kind of pointing that out because I find it interesting. And I also found it interesting that Germany was actually the one suggesting this. So just pointing that out as well. We're going to bounce all over the world today. It's another bit of insight coming out of Germany in relation to Greece right now. Greece has kind of come back at Germany. And ask them to pay for some World War II reparations. So you can really see how Greece right now is basically struggling to get any kind of dime that they can. But this request for the reparations, I believe, was just an act of trying to create some leverage here, because obviously Germany and Greece, they're not going to come to any kind of terms on restitution in terms of the 91 through 44 Nazi occupation of Greece, because there's been way too much time has gone on, and Greece obviously owes Germany way more money than Germany could possibly owe Greece at this point. But so essentially what I think happened and the way this is playing out is that Germany has come back, said, we're not going to pay you guys any reparations. You're, ridiculous. You're trying to use legal tricks to avoid paying for the money that you already owe us. And so that then the Tsipras, the new guy who is in charge of Greece, came back and he said that if they don't pay us our reparations, we're basically going to start seizing German assets, German art and things like that that are here in Greece. So that's essentially him trying to create a little bit of leverage so that perhaps Germany, who I believe has been the stickler so far in terms of coming to some kind of payout package for UK. I think that's what he was trying to do here, is just kind of create a little political, a little political leverage. And anyway, the Greece spokesman for the Greece foreign ministry says now that they are going to go ahead and move to seize German assets if they have to. Anyway, that's what's going on in Greece right now. Greece and Germany still kind of at heads. And it doesn't seem to be de-escalating anytime soon right now. France right now, as a result of all of this Islamic threat or alleged Islamic threat after the what I'm now believing was a false flag event at the Charlie Hebdo incident there. They're still going to go ahead and leave. They're going to continue to deploy 10,000 troops on the streets across the country. So again, we had this story a couple of weeks ago after the Charlie Hebdo incident that France was going to basically flood their streets with troops. And that's essentially what they've done. And they came out yesterday and said they're going to continue to do that for at least another year. Right now, a total of 7,000 troops will be monitoring and protecting religious buildings that are particularly threatened, according to the statement from France's Interior Ministry. Among other sites that are being patrolled by the troops are stations, media buildings, and various other possible targets for terrorists. So again, that is what is going on in France, although slightly ineffective. I'm just going to say, even with 10,000 troops on the street, yesterday, Jules, worth more than 9 million euro. You know what I like about this whole euro-dollar parity thing? Is I don't have to do any math anymore. When it says 9 million euro, you can pretty much just say $9 million at this point. Anyway, 9 million euro, about $9.5 million in Jules, went missing after a French highway heist yesterday. Two heavily guarded armored vans carrying jewels, diamonds, and art worth, according to some sources close to the investigation, at least $9.5 million, were robbed at a French motorway toll station Tuesday night by about 15 armed thieves. Police have been searching the Burgundy region for the gang. The jewelry heist occurred midnight at the Avalon toll booth on the A6 motorway connecting Paris and Lyon, which is about 200 kilometers southeast of Paris. The drivers of the two vans carrying jewels were forced out of their vehicles by the assailants, who escaped in four different cars. The two vans were later found by police abandoned in a forest near the site of the attack. Forensic examiners looked around the area, and the charred van remains amidst the vineyards in the town of Kien. No one was hurt in the robbery. Prosecutors from the city of Auxerre told AFP, and the gangs reportedly used gas to force the security transport personnel out of their vehicles. I'm glad they answered that question, because I'm still really curious about the ginormous gold heist that went down in Carolina last week or the week before. 11th largest gold heist in the world. These guys pulled over with their armored vehicle because it was having mechanical problems or something. I don't know. Inside job. Anyway, so yeah, 5 attacks on armored vehicles in the country in 2013. There were 6 in 2012. And this in November, a pair of gunmen robbed the Cartier jewelry store in a boutique in a tourist-shrouded Paris neighborhood. So anyway, the 10,000 troops on the streets apparently not doing much to quell jewelry robberies and things like that. So that's happening in Paris right now. Let's move on back to Russia. Russia yesterday said it was kicking off a year of friendship with the totalitarian North Korea as ties with the West are languishing over the Ukraine. The foreign ministry in Moscow announced that it had agreed to start a program of cultural exchanges with the Stalinist regime in Pyongyang aimed at taking ties between the one-time Cold War allies to quote-unquote a new high level. In these events are supposed to coincide with the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II in May, and they come as Moscow seeks to offset its slump in relations with the West over Russia's support for separatists in the Ukraine. The Kremlin has already said that the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, will be coming to Moscow in May to take part in the commemorations of the Soviet victory over Nazi Germany. The trip will be Kim's first trip abroad with his new haircut. I mean, since he took over after the death of his father, Kim Jong-il, in 2011, with the reclusive state possibly looking to reduce its dependence on its main diplomatic and economic buttress of China. Moscow has tried to bolster its relations with a range of partners from Beijing to Caracas in face of its own economic woes, which were sparked by Western sanctions over Ukraine and also tumbling oil prices. The late North Korean leader Kim Jong-il visited Russia in August of 2011 in his armored train. I didn't know he had an armored train, but that's pretty awesome. For a meeting with then Russian President Medvedev. Here's what I predict. I'm just going to predict this right now. There will be an attempt on the North Korean Kim Jong-un's life when he goes to Russia. Look just what happened outside of the Kremlin with Medvedev. Obviously an inside job. I would think right now, even as the relations around the world are crazy in the intelligence world, how could they possibly resist an opportunity to try and take out an armored train? I mean, who doesn't want that on their resume? Oh, we got Kim Jong-un's armored train. Anyway, I'd be cautious if I was him. Just saying. Again, Russia seeking to expand economic ties with North Korea. It's eyeing a project right now worth about $25 billion to overhaul the country's railway network in return for access to some of the mineral resources there in North Korea. Russia is also one of the key members of the long-stalled six-party negotiations with North Korea over ending its nuclear arms program. And on Wednesday, the office of German Chancellor Angela Merkel said she would not be attending the May 9th Victory Day parade in Moscow. Every party has a pooper. This one's name is Angela Merkel. On Wednesday, too, as a side note from Iraq, great news there. A faction within the volunteer fighters there, the Nohaba movement, they confirmed now that the city of Tikrit has become fully under the security forces' control. Again, ISIS has been completely removed from the city of Tikrit. All that is left, really, is a big, giant push towards Mosul. More news out of Russia and Ukraine. I told you guys I was going to be hopping around a little bit today, but Russia right now is doing something kind of neat. And again, I don't like to stand on a soapbox and go Putin, Putin, Putin. But he's using leverage again in a really unique way. Right now, Russia is offering Ukraine, in terms of Kiev, the Kiev side of Ukraine, a better deal on gas, a better price on gas if they also supply that gas to the Donbass region. So right now, a lot of people maybe don't know, power, gas, all that stuff is basically shut down on the east side of the country. They have intermittent electricity. They have no medical supplies. It's a real bad deal over there. So Putin right now, trying to do what he can, and far as I can tell, offering Kiev, who again, the Rivnia is down 50% just in 2015 alone. Those people in the eastern side are really, really suffering right now because they can't even get to an ATM or buy food or have electricity or whatever. So Putin using a little bit of leverage here, offering Kiev a better rate on gas should they decide that they will also be providing some of that to the eastern side of the country. So, man, I mean, that's how you use politics. That's politicking right there, ladies and gentlemen. Gotta say, too, this crazy story came out of China, and there is actually a time-lapse video. So you can go to redpillreports.com, and right there in the top section under international news in the show section for today, you'll be able to see this story. But a company in China, I just thought this was really cool. They built, get this, a 57-story skyscraper They built it from prefabricated Lego light blocks, and they completed it in 19 days. Top to bottom, 57-story skyscraper built in 19 days. You can watch it go down. I've never seen anything like that. That is absolutely crazy. And it's beautiful. The building covers 180,000 square meters, has office space for 4,000 people and 800 households. And the company claims that the building is eco-conscious because, A, they use these Lego-like prefabricated blocks, and that reduces the use of concrete by about 15,000 truckloads. So almost no dust was released when they were actually building this building. And also, well, obviously, you know, air pollution is one of the major issues in China right now. But because they built this thing out of Lego blocks, essentially, it's almost hermetically sealed. All the outside air cannot get in. So it's very tightly sealed, very well built. And again, 19 days to build a 57-story skyscraper is pretty outstanding. And if you watch the time lapse, I mean, it's impressive. I don't know, you know, how technologically we are here in this country, but I just found that to be really impressive. We also taught a talk about, some follow-up from, we had some story yesterday about the Swedish ambassador, basically being denied, a speaking engagement at the Arab bloc when they were, because he had spoken out against the rights or the human atrocity rights. Man, what am I trying to say? Sweden said on Tuesday it's going to cancel a defense agreement with Saudi Arabia. This is worth billions and billions of dollars to Saudi Arabia to Sweden's industry there because criticisms of the human rights record sparked this whole diplomatic row. So this diplomatic row between Saudi Arabia and Sweden still unfolding right now. On Monday, Saudi Arabia blocked Sweden Foreign Minister Wallström from giving a speech at the League of the Arab States in Cairo. And they were pretty upset about that. So anyway, the Arab League also agreed a resolution denouncing Wallström's remark to the Swedish parliament in which he said that he was upset about not being able to go speak to the Arab League, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, more fallout in terms of Sweden and Saudi Arabia. The world just keeps on spinning, doesn't it? We got to go to a 3-minute break, guys. We will be right back. Thank you guys so much for being here. Keep it right here, guys. We got lots more news to cover. We'll be right back. 3-minute break.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Hangar 18, your TFR Roundtable. Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And man, thank all of you guys in the chat room today. It's so nice to have you guys in there. I hope you guys are having a good day so far and enjoying the show. We have a lot of news to get into. I'm going to get into the national news now, and we will be getting to that story about the downed helicopter. But we got to talk about Ferguson right now. Ferguson, obviously, I grew up in St. Louis. St. Louis is just – Ferguson is not more than like an hour and a half from me, so I have a lot of friends in this area. And a lot of things going on over the last 24 and 48 hours. Probably the most important, two police officers shot early this morning at a protest. Again, about midnight, about 12:30 this morning, two police officers shot during a protest outside of the Ferguson, Missouri police headquarters, just hours after this chief's, the city's police chief quit following, this damning U.S. Justice Department report. Into his force. So the shooting of the two officers who are currently right now in serious condition at a hospital, obviously the latest incident in months of turmoil at the in the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson there, which has been at the center of the intense national debate over the police use of force, particularly against black men, since the white officer Darren Wilson shot the unarmed black teenager there in August. And St. Louis County Police Chief John Belmer told reporters early this morning that a 41-year-old officer from his department, again, this is a county police officer that got shot as well. I'm sorry, that guy was shot in the shoulder. And a 32-year-old officer from nearby Webster Groves Police Department was hit in the face about midnight as the crowd started to break up. There are some videos of this online. I haven't been able to find one that's clean yet in terms of language. But there were three shots that broke out. To me, it sounded like rifle fire. I'm just going to say that. I'll put that out right now. The officers immediately said that it came from the protesters, but again, this was just, they were basically standing off against each other across the street. All of the protesters say that the shots came from about 500 feet behind them up on an area that they call the Hill. So again, the night started off very peacefully, and there were about two dozen officers that were clad in riot gear, and they were basically just back and forth across the street shouting slogans at each other. And then all of a sudden, the gunshots rang out, and the scene basically went into pandemonium this morning. And you could see officers drawing their weapons, hiding, taking defensive positions and things like that. There were people on the ground writhing. And but again, the protesters are saying that these shots did not happen. It wasn't just somebody in exactly. I mean, boy, you just nailed that thing, man. And I even said that on Facebook this morning. Someone in the chat room, one of my good friends here, Wolf, said shots from the grassy knoll. And that's exactly what I thought this morning. And one of my buddies on Facebook, again, from the Ferguson area, immediately saying, I hope the people who shot these officers die and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, how do you know that they're not cops? And I hate to have to go to that level right off the bat. But remember what happened at the protest in Oakland, where the undercover officers are basically being called out by the protesters there. You just got to look for the shiny shoes, guys. Look for the shiny shoes. These people are dumb. The guys who think they can infiltrate the protesters, and they never seem to remember to change their boots or change their shoes out of like officer shoes. But anyway, if they wanted to keep this incident alive inside of Ferguson, this would be the way to do it. Okay, let's just talk about what else is going on in Ferguson. As of yesterday, the day before yesterday, the city manager of Ferguson, he resigned in the wake of, again, this critical Justice Department report on the behavior of local police there. So the city's municipal court has also been canceled for a week. So early Monday, again, they canceled all of municipal court there in Ferguson for this week. because that Justice Department report essentially said that it was all it was a revenue generation. That's all that they were trying to do. They, you know, for a city, I think, of like 18,000 people, there was something like 23,000 arrest warrants out right now, like currently. So anyway. Ferguson City Manager John Shaw said he believed his resignation is in the community's best interest. Yes, I think the man needs to be slapped in the face for about 3 hours. That would be in the community's best interest. But anyway, he was blamed for the behavior by law enforcement and the court system, which is absolutely accurate, in which the federal government found to be racially motivated and which primarily targeted African Americans, again, according to the New York Times and this Justice Department report. So in a 7-0 vote on Tuesday, Ferguson City Council agreed to a mutual separation agreement, which means they were going to fire this guy big time. And they basically allowed him to save some face here and come out and say, am I a sadist, really? So anyway, on Monday, State Judge Roy Richter was reassigned by the Missouri Supreme Court to take over all pending and future municipal cases from Ferguson. The High Court said the move was intended to help restore public trust and confidence, adding that Richter would be authorized to implement any reforms needed to ensure the rights of defendants are respected and to help restore the integrity of the system. And that's about what it's going to take right now. The mayor there in Ferguson also said on Tuesday that the city will seek out a new reform-minded judge to lead its municipal court. However, right now it is unclear when a new appointee will take place over the Ferguson cases again, will take over the Ferguson cases again. And as of Monday, the Supreme Court's appointment of Richter had no expiration date. Okay, so right now, the city manager, as of Tuesday, resigned and they rescheduled all the Ferguson stuff. Let's keep going. Because as of yesterday, Thomas Jackson, who is the police chief of Ferguson, Missouri, he resigned yesterday. And this is, again, a week after these federal investigators painted his department as having a racial bias and routinely violating residents' constitutional rights. Let's get into this story a little bit. So Mayor James Knowles actually came out and wanted to fire this guy. He wanted this dude gone, effective immediately. They came to an agreement that's going to allow the chief to stay through the 19th of March to allow for a transition team. Now, is that where the protests, again, thinking about the protests, how angry are you in Ferguson right now if the Justice Department, I mean, freaking Eric Holder came out and said if he has to physically permanently dismantle this police department that he will do it, okay? That's a win for the protesters. You've got the municipal courts being canceled and them acknowledging the fact that this is a factory for revenue generation, and you actively have the mayor of the city saying that he's going to fix the problem. That's win number two, right? You've got the chief of police stepping down at this point. If that's not win number three this week, I don't know what is. So how pissed off were the protesters really last night? What in the hell would promote, you know, would prompt them to actually fire at officers? And then to shoot at officers, again, these guys are dressed in uniform. If you're in St. Louis, it's very easy to tell the difference between a county police officer and a Webster Groves police officer and a Ferguson police officer, especially if, I don't know, you're looking at it through, say, a scope on a rifle. Just saying. Anyway, so Jackson now is the sixth Ferguson employee to leave in the wake of this Justice Department report. And obviously, we're going to keep coming back to this fact that this Justice Department did indicate very clearly that the city is full of racist police and court procedures. Now, both of these men, the the city manager and the chief of police here, were both named a lot in this 100-page report. I mean, prominently, they were named by name in this thing. And investigators faulted these top officials, again, for encouraging police to aggressively ticket motorists, many of them African Americans, as a means to generate money. Here's an example of this. The Department of Justice highlighted email exchanges between Shaw and Jackson about increased court revenue in March of 2011 being more than $180,000. Jackson wrote, "We beat our biggest month in the last 4 years by over $17,000." The city manager replied, "Wonderful." If you can't just look at that and say that these people not only need to be out of a job, but need to be in jail for racketeering and ruining people's lives, these guys don't. I'll tell you right now, this chief of police is getting a $100,000 severance package, ladies and gentlemen. $100,000. And look at the email. I don't care if you're black or you're white or whatever. This is injustice. Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. This is revenue generation at the expense of people who are not smart enough to understand that they're being manipulated by an unlawful court system. That is what, you know, that is the name of the game here, is that they are targeting people who have been completely beaten down by society for three decades. And, you know, I'm not just saying that. I've been to St. Louis, okay? I grew up there. I know what some of these neighborhoods look like. I understand what is going on. The music industry did not promote gangster rap for 20 years, for no reason whatsoever. You know, the education being absolutely demolished in these inner city, areas is not a coincidence. The fact that there are Planned Parenthoods on every flipping corner in these areas is not a coincidence. This is a targeted action against people who do not know any better, and that's not their fault. That is our fault for not understanding that all children are our children. We all have a responsibility to make this violence go away. And I'm very glad to see the DOJ coming out and actually doing something about this. And even though I don't believe in Eric Holder at all, he has come out and he said he will absolutely demolish and disassemble this police department if necessary. And I'll say what, that's a great start. Let's start with that one, and then we'll move to every other single municipal police department that engages in criteria or engages in quotas. All of this crap is over with as far as I'm concerned. I'm not going through this, and I don't recommend any of you guys pander to these people anymore. So, this Ferguson situation, getting out of control, three major wins for the protesters' side as far as I'm concerned, and then what do we have? Well, we have a shooting that occurs last night at the protests. That to me has false flag written all over it. Maybe that's just me. Yeah, other people are saying maybe not a cop, maybe an alphabet agency, a provocateur. But I agree. I don't believe that there's anybody there protesting that lives in that area that would not understand that the two events that unfolded the day before were not major, 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 major positive steps for the city. It's just, it does not make sense to me. And I don't believe that incident was accurate. Okay. Getting off my soapbox. I apologize. I know I ranted quite a bit there, but sometimes it's what we have to do. Also, just as an side note here, half of the U.S. Senate just committed felonies, and all of them could be facing 3 years in jail now. Interesting. Yeah. So Congress really done itself a poor service this time. On Monday, the neoconservative Republicans in the Senate were apparently so eager to go to war with Iran that they broke a federal law known as the Logan Act. In the process, the Logan Act has been around since 1799 and has remained mostly unchanged, created to keep rogue members of Congress from undermining foreign relationships. So how did the Senate Republicans violate the Logan Act? Well, they did that by being warmongers. More specifically, when the 47 members of Congress signed onto a letter that was sent to Iranian officials in an attempt to undermine the peace deal with Iran, they clearly violated the act. They also, all of them, committed felonies. According to the Cornell University, the act reads as follows. Any citizen of the United States, wherever he may be, who, without the authority of the United States, directly or indirectly, commences or carries on any correspondence or intercourse with a foreign government or any officer or agent thereof with the intent to influence the measures or conduct of any foreign government or any officer or agent thereof in relation to any disputes or controversies within the United States or with the United States or to defeat the measures of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. And the precedent has already been clearly set in the case United States versus Curtis Wright Export Corporation back in 1936. Justice Sutherland wrote in the majority opinion that the president alone has the power to speak or listen as a representative of the nation. He also makes treaties with the advice and consent of the Senate, but he alone negotiates. Into the field of negotiation, the Senate cannot intrude. The Congress itself is powerless to invade it. The Republicans, who so often talk of the Constitution almost as highly as they talk of their support for Israel, seem to have trampled all over the document multiple times in as many weeks. And as you see, when they invited Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to speak to Congress, they were also in violation of the Logan Act. And John Boehner is mostly at fault for the Netanyahu fiasco, though. And so he's really the only member of the House that should be prosecuted for that. But the other 47 members of the Senate, all Republicans, have, again, clearly violated the Logan Act, and they should all be punished to the fullest extent of the law, 3 years in prison for 47 members of our warmongering Congress. That would be a day I would like to see. Will it happen? I would not hold your breath, ladies and gentlemen, would not hold your breath. But again, why do we have these laws? What's the point of them if they don't really do anything? Oh, I got to follow up on this story. This is, you guys are going to love this. So remember the Atlanta police chief? We had this story, man, I want to say this was like 4 or 5 months ago. Oh, that's right. Laws don't apply to Congress. What's the opposite of progress? Well, that's Congress, isn't it? Fascinating, the English language, is it not? Okay, we had that story a few months ago about the Atlanta police chief who accidentally discharged his weapon and shot his wife twice. You guys remember that story? Okay. Suburban Atlantic police chief who faces possible indictment for shooting his wife, again, possible indictment for shooting his wife in bed on New Year's Day, partially paralyzing her, he resigned yesterday. He says, in light of the recent tragedy in my personal family, I need to continue to focus my time and efforts there. This is Peachtree City Police Chief William McCollum. This is his statement that he released yesterday. So apparently McCollum went to sleep at about 9:30 p.m. on New Year's Eve after drinking alcohol and taking sleep medication, according to the Fayette County District Attorney Scott Ballard. Awakened by barking dogs, the chief retrieved his service revolver and checked the house and then returned to the bed with his gun. McCollum told a police dispatcher that his gun discharged, striking his wife, Margaret. Notice that in this article, they're leaving out the fact that he accidentally discharged his weapon twice and hit his wife twice. But they're just saying in this particular article that, yeah, discharged his weapon accidentally. And although the district attorney said there is no evidence that the chief intended to hurt his wife, the prosecutor's plan is to ask the grand jury next month to indict McCollum on, get this, a misdemeanor charge of reckless conduct for taking a loaded gun to bed with him after drinking alcohol and taking sleep medication. Is that not the stupidest thing? Completely ignoring the fact that the guy shot his wife twice and that he was a 35-year-old police chief, somebody who I at least hope has a moniker of gun safety training. The idea that he would have discharged his weapon twice, accidentally hitting his wife both times and paralyzing her seems a little bit far-fetched to me. So anyway, he resigned yesterday pending indictment potentially for the stupidest thing I've ever heard ever in my life. I got to say also, I believe Hillary Clinton is done, ladies and gentlemen. I do believe at this point, I'm a racist. Woo! That's cool. Thanks, poet. How am I a racist? What? Wait, I don't understand. I think Hillary's done, you guys. And this is why I think Hillary is done. As of yesterday, the Associated Press has now moved to sue the State Department to release, to force the release of all of the email correspondence and government documents from Hillary Rodham Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. Okay. Who owns the AP? Right? Who owns the AP? Well, that's the Rothschild Organization and all of their little ancillary organizations, right? It's one of the big, big Rothschild owned media sources. So, exactly, Woodwolf, her. That would be the perfect answer to this question. So to see the AP turn around and launch an investigation, not even an investigation, an actual lawsuit. I mean, they are threatening to sue her for all this stuff. That's a big development. And this is all over Yahoo News. This is all over Drudge. I mean, she is really being thrown under the bus. I don't know who she made upset, but this is going to be an ender for her. This isn't something that she can sorry, you guys in the chat room just cracked me up. That's a good point. Somebody's suggesting she won't go down easy because she knows where all the bodies are buried. I do agree with that, but I think the only thing that could turn a tide against her would be something like this. It has to be in the mainstream. It has to be right in front of everybody. There's no way this is going to be on the ticker tape on Fox News for the next 1100 years, you guys. That's all they're going to be talking about is just how awful Hillary Clinton is with this email thing. And I agree. I mean, obviously she's the devil. She spent $6 billion unaccounted dollars from the State Department to go foster a war in Libya. And I mean, think of all the people, there's 500,000 people in Libya that have died, as a result of this woman. And here we are thinking that she's going to be, you know, potentially the next Democratic elect presidential nominee. It's just crazy. So anyway, AP now follows with this legal action because they have, again, they filed repeated requests under the Freedom of Information Act that have not gotten fulfilled. They include one of the requests the AP made five years ago, and others pending since the summer of 2013. So the suit in the U.S. District Court comes a day after Clinton broke her own silence about the private email while she was America's top diplomat. So the FOIA requests in the suit seek materials related to her public and private calendars. Correspondence involving aides likely to play important roles in her expected campaign for presidency, and the Clinton-related emails about Osama bin Laden's raid and the national security surveillance practices. So they're going big time here, guys. And the AP pulling out the stops like this is a big deal. I think that we can almost stick a fork in Hillary at this point. And I'll tell you what, that makes me very, very happy, because there was nothing more terrifying to me than either a Clinton or a Bush being back in charge again this next election. I don't know where we're going to go from here. I'm thinking Panama. I don't know about you guys. 7 Marines and 4 soldiers were presumed dead after an Army helicopter crashed during a nighttime training mission off the Florida coast, where some of the remains have now washed ashore. And search efforts were being hampered by heavy fog, according to U.S. military officials on Wednesday. A spokesman for the Elgin Air Force Base in North Florida did not provide details on the remains. They are still considering it a search and rescue mission right now. One of the 2 UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters participating in routine exercises crashed near the base 50 miles east of Pensacola, and rescue workers discovered debris at about 2 o'clock in the morning. They did recall their rescue chopper. Okay, thank you, PRC. So have they recovered all of the – I need to find a more updated story. It's not good when the chat room knows more about stuff than I do. But anyway, the Marines were part of a special operations unit from Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, and the air crew and helicopter belonged to the Louisiana Army National Guard. 4 crew members were part of the Louisiana National Guard, according to a news release from the state governor's department. Okay. Oh, they recalled the rescue chopper because of fog still. Okay. That's what's going on. So we probably haven't gotten, all the information. Yes. And again, it's awful, but Wood, I totally agree with you in the chat room as well. Curious events. Who were these guys? again, 11 service members aboard presumed dead. Could be one of the deadliest domestic military training accidents in years. There really isn't any indication where these guys were other than to say that they were, Marines and, some, you know, ancillary air support from, the Louisiana National Guard. So that's what I know right now. But, yeah, you get these specialized ops guys going in there and going down, and you start having to wonder. I got an update too. This is just stupid. You guys are going to love this. So we've had this story. I went into it pretty big depth the other day about the change that took place in the ATF regulation guide between 2005 and 2013. Talking specifically about the green-tipped bullets that were allegedly part of, and they were excluded from being considered armor-piercing in the 2005 edition, and then they were not listed under the exclusion category from the armor-piercing, you know, in the armor-piercing category in the 2014 ATF regulation guide. And it corresponded with this opening of the comment period by the ATF as to whether or not they were going to disallow these bullets. So Ben Swan did a fantastic job the other day getting the new PDF of the ATF regulation guide out and pointing out that, you know, lo and behold, it wasn't part of the exemption process anymore, which essentially meant that those bullets had already been regulated out of the regulation guide. So ATF came out yesterday with a new report, and this is what they said. They said, media reports have noted that the 2014 ATF regulation guide published online does not contain a listing for exemptions for armor-piercing ammunition, and concluded that the absence of this listing indicated that these exemptions have been rescinded, which makes sense if you understand English and can read. But this is what the ATF says. Please be advised that the ATF has not rescinded any armor-piercing ammunition exemption, and the fact that they are not listed in the 2014 online edition of the regulations was an error. It has no legal impact on the validity of exemptions. The existing exemptions for armor-piercing ammunitions, which apply to 5.56 and 2.23 SS-109 and M855 projectiles, those are the green tip, the green coated on the projectile tip there, And the U.S. 30-06 M2AP projectile, identified by the black coating on the projectile tip, all remain in effect. The listing of armor-piercing ammunition exemptions can be found in the 2005, so again here they're referring you back to the 2005 ATF regulation guide on page 166. The 2014 regulation guide will be corrected in PDF format to include the listing of armor-piercing ammunition exemptions and posted shortly. The ebook slash iBook version of the regulation guide will be corrected in the near future. ATF apologizes for any confusion caused by this publishing error. Boom. There is, ladies and gentlemen. That's what happens when you raise a ruckus about something. Because I tell you what, if people had not raised a ruckus about this, do you think that ATF would be backpedaling, calling this thing a publication error? You know, I mean, honestly, do they, I mean, come on, ATF, you guys are going to make publication errors. This was obviously, anyway, the open comment period is still open on the ATF website. If any of you would care to, comment about the legality of the green tip ammunition going forward, but, funny enough that they come out and say, oops, we made a publishing error. And I got to tell you, Jim Sensbrenner, who is a Republican from Wisconsin, he went ahead and introduced a bill yesterday to completely eliminate the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. To also to force the consolidation of the agency's necessary functions into the FBI and FDA. And I totally agree with this. He says the ATF is scandal-ridden, and it is a largely duplicative agency that lacks a clear mission. Its framework itself is an affront to the Second Amendment and yet another reason why Congress should pass the ATF Elimination Act. And this is him talking in a statement to the Hill. The legislation would require the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the administrator of the FDA to jointly develop and submit a plan for winding up the affairs of the ATF without compromising core functions, eliminate and reduce duplicative unnecessary functions or waste. So again, some people in Congress starting to pull their heads out of the sand and say, hey, we've got all these overlapping law enforcement agencies that really don't do anything and mostly just hassle people. Maybe we should not do that. We could probably save some money. Okay, that's what's going on. Pardon me. Hang on a second here. Okay, I'm back. Let's see. That's what's pretty much going on in the national news right now. I want to quickly – man, we're just running out of time. I'm sorry. I know I get off on rant sometime, but wild day in the markets yesterday. Gold right now, $149. Silver down to $15.50. Dow is currently up 200 points. Crazy, man. It's just crazy. Dollar index, 99.28. It broached 100 yesterday. It really did. And let's see what the euro is up just a touch, but we're still at 106.11. So they're controlling that parity run pretty darn well. 291 for a Bitcoin right now. I don't have time to look at the BDI. Hopefully Truth will get it to me in the chat room, and I'll let you guys know what's going on with that after the break. 3 minute break. When we come back, Chris and Cherie Gio will be joining us here. Keep it right here, guys. 3 minute break.
Chris and Cherie Gio here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
You must unite what has been set asunder.
We are TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you all who are hanging out in the chat room. I cannot tell you guys how much I love seeing all the familiar faces in there and being able to carry on some conversation with you guys out there. Again, the whole goal here at Red Pill Reports is to create this forum so that we can bring you guys the best guests that are out in the world right now and the best information in the world, and then give you guys an opportunity to comment on it amongst yourselves, also to shoot questions back for us when we have amazing guests on. And today, ladies and gentlemen, is another one of these days. I got to tell you, I don't know how Fletch, the producer, keeps pulling these amazing guests off, but today, another high watermark, Chris and Cherie Geo, the one and only Chris and Cherie Geo, joining us on the Red Pill Reports today. Obviously, a lot of you guys know out there, they are the station managers and directors of Truth Frequency Radio, and it was basically their brainchild, and they brought it to fruition. And what an amazing experience it has been to be part of this program and to be part of this network. Also, just want to point out that Chris and Cherie Geo, although they are they do have their own program over on GCN, and they are amazing when it comes to understanding how all this network stuff goes. They both are also really cover a wide gamut in terms of some of the information that they've got. They are both very astute in geopolitics, eugenics, economics, all kinds of amazing issues. So who knows what we're going to talk about today. It's always a good time when Chris and Cherie join us on the program. So I want to thank you guys, first of all, Chris and Cherie, for taking some time out of your schedule to be able to join us today.
Thank you for having us, absolutely. And thank you for everything that you're doing here on Truth Frequency. I think that starting the mornings out with your show, as far as the live schedule, just really is the icing on the cake and really just sets everything up. And then ending it with Phoenix as well. I mean, the whole schedule, I take a look and go, wow, I can't believe we have such a fantastic team here at Truth Frequency. And we're so glad to have you and Robert and your entire crew be a part of it.
Oh man, I don't want to keep tooting your horn here, but what you guys have built here with Truth Frequency, and especially watching it transpire just over the last few months, watching the schedule change, you know, you've brought Roger Sales on now, the live schedule throughout the entire day is amazing, and it's such a diverse amount of information. You've got people who are, really into occult type stuff. You got people who are really into obscure economic issues like, Phoenix is. You got Kev Baker, who's just really not afraid to attack any type of topic really out there. And, it's just, I really like the culture, I think, is really what it comes down to me, is that, you know, I've never been in a culture like this where all of the hosts support one another and appreciate what the other hosts are doing, It's just, it's such a unique place, Chris, and I can't tell you again how thankful we are, myself and Fletch and Robert to have been given the opportunity to come here and be a part of it, because I have the sneaking suspicion, that this is like ground floor, brother, and that this thing is gonna blow up and continue to do so. We're watching the live stream and, the stats just go up every single day. It's just remarkable, Chris.
It really is. It really is. And it's really taken a life of its own. But we're starting to network with George Norrie, Coast to Coast, a lot of the really key players in the radio scene. And they're taking notice to what we're doing here at Truth Frequency. I mean, George flat out told me, Chris, Truth Frequency is the biggest and the best alternative independent station out there. He was recommending a couple of hosts for us to bring onto the station. It unfortunately didn't work out, but he did acknowledge us as that. And so to be in the eyes of people who have been doing this for decades and people who've I've looked up to and people I consider not a role model, but inspiration. Yeah, that's a better way to put it. People I draw inspiration from. It's really humbling. It really is.
Well, without giving away too much of the, giving away too much of the farm, I have to say I have seen a template for a new website and it was pretty astounding. So you want to talk a little bit about what your hopes for the future of Truth Frequency, what are the hopes for the future and what are we trying to do now?
Right now, I'm actually working on cloning. I'm trying to get cloning tactics down really good so I can clone like three of myself.
Okay.
So I can get everything done that I want to do.
That's so funny. That's at the top of my to-do list too. Like really literally on my to-do list. Number one, clone self. That is funny that you bring that up.
Because as you saw, we have that new website template and it's awesome. I just don't have time to do everything that needs to be done in order to get it up and running. But I wanted to launch it at the beginning of 2015. But we're already into March. But the station is really going to take a new direction. I mean, it's going to stay grounded in, at where it's at right now, but it's taking a new direction in terms of just presentation and look and feel and everything. We're going to go a little bit less on the news articles and more on the shows, because the news articles, they were great for a little bit, but people really care about the shows, and we really should be putting the shows up front line. We've got the nice slider going on right now, showcasing all of the shows, but the site needs to be more oriented towards the shows and less news.
Well, I love the site right now. My favorite part, obviously, is the Bluebeam aspect. When you type Bluebeam into the search and you get the little rocket and you can fly around and destroy everyone else's shows. Not that I would ever do that.
About that.
I would never, not that I would do that or condone that activity. But that's my favorite part of the site right now, buddy.
Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent.
So,
what I was saying earlier, I mentioned George Norrie and, Clear Channel and the big players acknowledging what we're doing here at Truth Frequency is not only, inspiring and humbling, but also really goes to show where the future of radio is, because I think the big players out there understand that FM, AM, satellite radio are way too expensive to operate, and they're ultimately dying mediums. It's not going to die out in the next year, but it's probably going to die out in the next 10 years. 15 years max is what I give AM and FM and satellite, because it's all moving to internet. The cost of running an internet station is a small percentage compared to the cost of running a traditional terrestrial station. Most cars are going to be equipped with 3G, 4G. People usually have internet anywhere they go now on their phones. I don't ever turn on the radio. I always take my phone and plug it into my car and listen to either podcasts that I've downloaded or live streams or whatever. So this is really the future of radio, and we have our finger on the pulse of this future of radio. And so you're right. We are really at the ground floor, and I think Truth Frequency is going to be one of the stations that really just propels into the next generation of broadcasting.
Man, I totally agree. And I think the big push out there in terms of technology is going to be this whole mesh networking thing where everybody essentially becomes their own internet hub. I see a lot of the big, IP providers and the AT&T type companies. They're working on making that technology viable, and I think once that happens, you won't have a reason to have FM. Everybody will basically be an FM receiver in their pocket. So I completely agree. I think the ease with which we can do this over the computer now, especially given Skype. I mean, think about Roger's show. I mean, he's coming from Argentina, and yesterday his connection was fantastic. So why would anybody spend the amount of money that it would take to go, especially once you get into like the shortwave broadcasting and things like that? It just seems very cost prohibitive. I mean, I'm not in your shoes, but I can imagine that the format that you've built is about the most user-friendly one that's out in the world right now.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, we are launching a new campaign. Joe Joseph actually came up with this, where we're going to be giving away little micro stations to listeners. And I don't know exactly how he's got this arranged, but we have several of these all over the United States already. They reach about a 2-3 mile radius, some a little bit more, and they're not supposed to.
Right.
You know, the broadcasting systems that we're sending out to people are completely legal, and you can just set them up and just stream Truth Frequency. So we can really create a new kind of reach that way. But then again, it is a dying medium. So it's good to utilize for the next 5-10 years. But after that, watch, I guarantee you everything's going straight internet.
Wow. That's interesting. I had no idea that Joe had come up with a program like that. That is really cool, because that's what we need a lot more of anyway, just to saturate the markets. We need more of this whole guerrilla radio kind of activity, I think. Also with the guerrilla planting and all the other stuff. We just overgrow the government in every way that we possibly can, as far as I'm concerned.
You're absolutely right. And that's the only way you can do things in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Because the FCC has things so locked down that you can't even get a license to run a full-time FM station or AM station. It's completely locked down. They will deny your license. It'll take 5-10 years for you the application to even go through. The
wow.
Fees are just ridiculous, and they just simply are not giving licenses out anymore. So if you're not in the radio game right now, then you're not going to get a big 50,000 watt station.
I would imagine not without some kind of major Rothschild backing or something. I mean, I would imagine at that level, once you're getting into that, you're pretty heavily controlled as to what you're allowed to broadcast.
Oh, absolutely. Not only that, but a lot of it is corporate based. So you have to conform to what your corporate sponsors tell you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't speak outside of those talking points, because you piss people off and they stop paying you, and then your station shuts down.
Right. And then
on the other hand, we're completely listener supported. And that's the reason why we've run on this platform like this, because we want to be accountable to our listeners. We don't want to be accountable to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And if our listeners are paying the bills, then we're accountable to them. And there's nobody that can come in here and tell us what to do or how to do it.
That's right. That's right. And that's why every day I say, hey, if you guys can throw Truth Frequency a dollar or two, you know, there is a donate button on the page. And that's what pays all the bills around here. That's why we don't have commercials every 6 minutes like some other stations have.
Oh, it is incredible. We're on the national AM and FM standard clock on
right.
GCN. And it's just it's horrendous. It really is. It makes broadcasting very difficult. And I've thought to myself several times, OK, the reach that we're getting, the extra reach, is it worth interrupting the show every 10 minutes the way we do? And it's just it's not a good way to broadcast. As people can tell, the ads here, Truth Frequency, we've got My Patriot Supply, and I work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just run their ads as a courtesy. They've done a lot for us, so you know, that's why you know, they have done a tremendous amount for us. You know, MPS, a lot of people don't know, but when we started Truth Frequency, MPS just wrote us a big fat check and said, here, get started with whatever you need.
Really?
And I go, man, I can't accept this from you. This is too big. And
right.
He's like, no, you don't understand. I created this big company and we're doing really well, and I want to help the truth community out there, and I really like what you're doing. And then one thing led to another. I got a job with them and a full-time salary, and you know, they've taken really, really, really great care of us and Truth Frequency and everything. So, it's the least we can do for MPS.
Right.
Hemp USA, I know Tom personally. So again, I know that that's a really good product, really good company. But other than that, you can tell that the ads are just kind of fluff ads, and
they're
just filler ads.
They're hilarious. A lot of them.
Some of them. Well, I pulled some of them because, you know, some of those that were too funny were just, I think he was making the station sound a little kooky.
Sophomore, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but really, the commercial breaks are there simply so the host can get up and get a cup of coffee.
And I appreciate that.
That's it.
I got to tell you how much I appreciate that. No, I love it though, and I agree, man. And the, you know, one of the things that that I would have struggled with over at GCN would have just been getting a train of thought together. You know, having a guest, especially with some of the guests that the guys behind the scenes here at Red Pill are able to bring on the program. These are people that we need to wind up and let go, and trying to interrupt them every 6 or 7 minutes just isn't effective, and we lose, you know, a lot of time in terms of just being able to get information across. So I'm very thankful that the format is open the way it is. And that seems to be that the guests respond to that quite a bit as well. So again, I want to talk about your move. You mentioned, My Patriot Supply, and was that the reason that you guys just moved?
Yes, they transferred me to the corporate office.
Mm-hmm. And so, are you in Washington State now, if I'm not mistaken?
We are in Washington. Yes, we are.
Man, I'm so jealous.
Wanted me to live in Idaho.
Oh.
And I said no.
No. Yeah, that's a good answer.
But I will live on the border of Idaho and Washington.
Oh, okay.
And so that it's like, you know, 30 miles to the office. But you know what's funny though is I did a video where I was literally on the border of Washington and Idaho, and just a few feet, literally, if I would have walked to my left about 25 feet, I would be a felon. I would be in jail for six months,
right?
Because I had a cannabis e-liquid with me and I was holding it up to the camera and doing this whole video just to illustrate exactly how ridiculous this is, because I'm perfectly fine where I am, but 25 feet to my left and I go to jail for 6 months minimum.
Yeah.
Now, what has changed about me walking 25 feet in one direction to the other? Have I become more violent? Have I hurt anybody? Have I violated anybody's rights? Have I damaged anybody's property? Have I done anything wrong? No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. All I did was just walk 25 feet in one direction. So when you really see it from that perspective, you see how ridiculous cannabis prohibition really is.
I completely agree with that. And I want to get back to that question in just a second, because I've got a more general question regarding that. But I have to point out, someone in the chat room would like very much to send you guys some Federal Reserve notes in the mail. They don't want to use the electronic banking system. So is there an address that would be convenient? Is it on the website, or is there someplace like a P.O. box? I know, right? We've got the
really
best
sweet.
Listeners. You have the best listeners in the world at this network. I hope you understand that, Chris. But these people want to support you and us. And, you know, what's an address that they can send that
thank
to?
Thank you. Right now, we don't have one because we just made this big move. So we've got to set up a new P.O. box.
Okay.
And I did get the message from Robert the other day, and I just forgot to write him back. But, yeah, I will set that up here in the next week, because we need a new place for people to send bumper sticker requests to.
Roger that. I don't have a bumper sticker. What the heck? Bumper stickers?
Oh, you don't have a bumper
sticker?
No.
We got to do some serious chatting off the air here anyway. We won't go into that right now. I'm looking for an intro like Kev Baker's too, just to put that bug in your ear.
Okay. I can do that for you.
Awesome. Anyway, what do you guys think? Is Cherie with us already? Has she woken up and joined the party?
I am. I'm here.
Cherie, it's so nice to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a while. Just wanted to say hi.
Definitely. I haven't talked to you in a while either. Good morning.
Morning. So how are you enjoying Washington State? Is this your first time in Washington State?
You know, it's my first time in Washington State, but I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it as much as I loved the climate in here is so much like Texas that it's unreal. And I've asked around and people have told me, no, we're not supposed to be like Texas. This is very unusual for us. We're usually much colder than this.
Pole shift.
Mm-hmm.
Northeast has moved more towards the North Pole. We've moved more towards the equator.
But yes, the climate here is beautiful. The people here are just, some of them are the salt of the earth and
yes.
The best people you'll ever meet. Mm-hmm. Other people, not so much.
There's a lot of racism out here.
Yeah, there's a...
And I'm brown.
Well, especially on the east side there. You guys may not know, I went to Central Washington University. So I lived in Ellensburg for a long time, and I've been over to Spokane, got friends in Idaho. So yeah, I know exactly kind of what your area. Look out for the wind coming up here, guys. You're getting into the windy season. Just putting that out there. But yeah, racism is definitely an issue there for sure.
Well, yeah, I was at a grocery store and I was talking to somebody, and there was this white supremacist looking guy, tattoos all over him, everything. He was clean. He was sweeping the floors, and he looked at me like, ugh, you look at you brown scum.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, shut up and go sweep the floors, dude.
I'm running a nationwide, well, a worldwide radio station, and you're sweeping floors. Well, and it goes back to the drug use problem in this area. They have a big meth problem here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And as a result, have you ever read the book, This Is Your Country on Drugs?
No.
It's a fascinating read. It's a really good book. But in that book, the author details how they've brought, the middle class down with methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
And they've basically infiltrated all these different areas around the country and then instituted, you know, methamphetamine to the board housewives and the mechanics, and you know, it's not just truck drivers anymore and
right.
people like that that are using this. It's the middle class, and it's destroyed them. And so as a result, instead of seeing their drug use as the problem and trying to fight that in their own community, they see the brown people as the problem. They see the brown people as taking their jobs and taking everything.
Mm-hmm. Factually speaking, in the 70s, methamphetamine was relatively safe. Now, it's not safe to do, period, but relatively safe compared to the garbage that's out right now. The exact same thing that happened with methamphetamine happened with MDMA back around 2000. And what happened is the DEA came in and put the precursor on the watch list. And so all of a sudden, the people that were making all this stuff weren't able to get the precursor, the proper precursor, so they started experimenting with different things.
Okay.
And this led to some very, very dangerous combinations, which ended up in mass deaths and overdoses and all kinds of horrendous things happening to people as a result of the DEA putting the precursor on the watch list. So if they would have just left the original stuff alone, then we wouldn't have the deaths and all of this. But they had to create the deaths in order to point the finger and say, mm-hmm. look at what's going on, the ecstasy culture, the rave culture. People are overdosing. Hmm. Nobody has ever overdosed on MDMA. But what they've overdosed on is like PMA and other adulterants, which they take believing is MDMA, but the overdose threshold is so low compared to the MDMA. Not only that, but you take PMA, for instance, it feels like MDMA, but it feels like a really, really weak dose of MDMA. So what you do, you go, oh, well, I'm going to take a couple more pills. Oh, well, that's not working. I'll take a couple more. And then boom, you wind up dead because it's not MDMA, it's PMA. Same thing with the methamphetamine. Now, I'm not for methamphetamine whatsoever. I think it's a very, very evil substance, but it just goes to show that the DEA is responsible for most of the deaths that are happening that are drug related.
Now, would you guys think that the insertion of the methamphetamine culture or the creation of that culture, would you guys liken that to the same way that the DEA put, coke and crack on the streets of like inner city? I mean, was this an attack against the white low class people out there? Not to pigeonhole anybody if you're a meth user, but you know what I mean? Like they basically went after the African American communities in the inner cities with, crack and cocaine. Do you guys see that same agenda here?
I remember in my rave days, I never saw heroin and I rarely, rarely ever saw meth. It was mostly LSD and MDMA and it was good and it was pure and everybody was having fun. There were no overdoses. There was no nothing. There was always ambulances outside in the event that somebody didn't drink enough water or overheated or something like that. But I don't remember any overdoses or deaths or anything. Then once this happened, when they put the precursor for MDMA on the watch list, at the exact same time, they busted one of the biggest LSD manufacturers at the exact same time. So all of a sudden, boom, you have LSD and you have MDMA taken off the scene, which was then replaced with heroin and methamphetamine. And nowadays I talk to people and they tell me, oh yeah, my son has a really bad heroin problem. Or, I even know people that have really bad heroin problems and I'm going, heroin? I've never even seen heroin.
Right, me neither.
Much less anything like that. But it just goes to show how the times have changed. So I do believe that that was part of the agenda, mm-hmm. to remove the things that people were going out and having fun with that were relatively safe and replacing them with something that was even more dangerous and more addictive, because MDMA, for instance, and LSD, they're not addictive.
Right.
I mean, they could be psychologically addictive where you want to take them, every weekend, but you don't go into convulsions when you don't have it. You don't have withdrawals when you don't have it. Methamphetamine and heroin, you can die if you just stop doing it overnight. That's dangerous. Now, Bayer Pharmaceutical holds the patent for heroin. They're the ones that created it. So who created these drugs to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and not only that, let's look at the sociological implications of this. You've got a whole group, probably millions, probably about 15 million people who are in that category that you mentioned earlier, just like they saw that the black people in the LA area especially were in that group of people that were getting riled up, people
right.
that were starting to get angry. They were starting to get violent. They were starting to fight back against the police. They were starting to write rap songs about fighting against the police and fighting for your community. And so they had to put a stop to it. So they inserted crack cocaine uh-huh. in the 1980s.
Uh-huh.
You're seeing the same exact thing happen with the white people with meth, except meth is a little bit different from crack in that people think that they're using it to get past this economic crash and to get their, get back on their feet and all these things, when really they're not doing anything. And so as the years progress and as the economy continues to go downward, we're going to drive down our streets and we're going to see more and more of these meth houses, you know, and I say meth houses, not like they're actually making meth. I'm saying meth houses as in they've got, you know, old tires out on their lawn. Right. They haven't cleaned their house in months. Their children are, you know, wearing ragged clothes. It looks awful. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, oh, how can they live like that? How can they live like that? Because they're on a drug that prevents them from seeing the conditions in which they're living. And that is why they chose meth for the white man, the poor white man's drug, because it gets their mind off of the fact that they're poor and that they are being oppressed by a government that is only interested in taking as much money as they can from them and then killing them off in some kind of weird death panel thing.
Boy, have to face the fact that people have been altering their consciousness since the beginning of time. Cavemen stumbled across a mushroom, picked it up, ate it, went on a psychedelic trip. You know, this has been happening since the beginning of time, and I think it's responsible for a lot of our evolution, especially mushrooms, dimethyltryptamine, ayahuasca, these sacred shamanic brews. Even children alter their consciousness when they spin around in circles really fast. They want to get dizzy. They want to feel weird. They want to feel good. So we just have to accept this as a part of our society and a part of our human existence. However, what they've done is they've replaced everything that's natural and everything that's spiritual as well with things that are very destructive to the body. And I do believe this is to keep people disconnected from that consciousness, because you eat a couple of magic mushrooms and then all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, all of this is BS.
Yeah.
Yeah, this whole governmental structure, why am I letting people control my life? Why am I letting, look at me, I'm infinite consciousness. They don't want you thinking like that. Cannabis as well, as it's being proven over and over again now, is really the best cure-all for everything.
Man, it seems everything, like it, doesn't it? Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, from depression to seizures to cancer to all kinds of things like that. And one of the main talking points is that cannabis isn't safe for children. What about the children? What about the children? Well, we've seen over the last 10 years what it's doing to the children. Children with seizures, children with ADHD. Yep. They're all taking cannabis oil. They're not sitting around smoking joints, as a lot of people would have you believe. Well, what are you going to do? Just have your child just sit around and just smoke a joint? No, you give him a cookie, or you give him a tincture, or you give him something like that. He doesn't sit around and go, yeah, what's up, listening to the Great Dead or whatever.
Right.
But it's helping so many people. So we have to also remove that stigma from it. What about the children? What about the children? They need it just as bad as everybody else does.
Well, and not only that, the teenagers here, well, in Colorado where we were, they actually smoked less marijuana after it was legalized.
Really?
Because it's not taboo anymore. It's not this, ooh, let's go smoke a joint. You know, my parents won't find out. What did you tell your parents you were doing? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that thing anymore. And so kids are like, oh, yeah, it's weed. Sometimes I like it, but only whenever I, you know, don't have to go to school the next day.
Right.
You know, and so they're learning responsibility. They're learning how to use these.
They're learning how to be responsible cannabis users, which is really what we want to have people do anyway. I mean, as far as I'm pigeonholing myself, but that's really what fundamentally we need more of in this country is responsible cannabis users. Okay, guys, we have to go to a 3-minute break. I'm sure you guys know the drill. Everybody in the chat room, just hang tight. We got a 3-minute commercial break. We'll come right back and we'll pick up this conversation. I do want to talk. There is some now pending legislation about the legalization of medical marijuana. And I'm wondering also what you guys think might have a more profound effect on our economy, the legalization of cannabis or the legalization of hemp, because I think both of those are big, big camps that we need to change in this country. So anyway.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sill, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sill?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money, has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at MiffUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods. But what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you, Chris, we've got a pretty rambunctious bunch in the chat room today. It's funny to me because we did a show with you guys, I think our very first show, and we got into a pretty deep discussion about ayahuasca and about how you and I, and also Cherie, we all kind of have this idea about inner exploration as being a pretty important component of society and our place in it and things like that. And while we were trying to have a discussion about marijuana today, there are a lot of people in the chat room right now, brother, who want to find out a little bit more about your ayahuasca stuff. And I know that that's a big, long discussion, but maybe because, you know, we do have the best listeners in the world here at Red Pill and at Truth Frequency, and perhaps we should give the listeners what it is they want. So maybe you guys could just touch on ayahuasca briefly, talk us through what that experience is like, and just kind of touch on that for just a sec, if you would.
Unfortunately, no one can be told what ayahuasca is. You have to see it for yourself.
Well, I think a good segue.
It's very true, though, because I can sit here and talk all day long about the experiences, but unless you experience it for yourself, you're never really going to fully grasp what it is. So drink a cup of tea and find out for yourself. That's what I would tell people. Now, I know people want to hear about what it is. So first of all, let's just start by exactly what it is. It's a shamanic brew that people have been drinking for thousands of years down in the Amazon, particularly, although you can find analogs of it all over the world. The Greeks had, what was it called?
Hykeion.
Hykeion, yes. And the Africans have their own version. And it seems like dimethyltryptamine, which is DMT, right, has been found in many, many brews through many, many different cultures. This is a chemical that's produced. Some say there hasn't been 100% solid evidence to link to the pineal gland, but most people would agree that the pineal gland produces dimethyltryptamine and is responsible for dreams and also near-death experiences, because when you die, all the DMT is released in your brain.
Yeah.
Rick Strassman was the first person, and I think the only, to be granted a DEA license to do a 7-year study on dimethyltryptamine. Now, he was doing the experiments a little bit weird. We know Rick. We've had him on the show a couple of times before. But he was putting people in a hospital setting and injecting them with dimethyltryptamine. Right. Now, I know it's all about set and setting. And if you're in a hospital setting, you're not going to have the same experiences as if you're in the Amazon or even in your living room with your friends and family.
Right.
So I think the studies were a little bit skewed as far as that goes. But he came to the conclusion that, well, he came to several conclusions. One of the conclusions is that dimethyltryptamine is more like a lubricant for the soul. It's what allows the body to come, the soul to come into the body. At birth, for instance, you are, there's a mass DMT release of both the baby and the mother, but exactly. A lot of the drugs that they give the mother stops that DMT release. Mm-hmm. So there's not that connection formed with the baby.
I didn't know
birth.
That. Wow. Yes. That's interesting. Yeah.
The other conclusion that he came to is that these experiences that people are reporting are actually somewhere where they're going as opposed to subjective experiences.
Yes.
Because people were insisting that they were going somewhere, and he was jotting down, subjective experience. But after so many people were so certain that they actually left their body and went somewhere, then the experiences became then he started looking at the experiences a lot different. So DMT can do many, many different things for you. Lindsay Lohan is probably the best example that I can give, and I would love to get her on the show. We need to contact her.
That's
because
nice. Wow.
She was part of the Anti-Panty Club. She was completely wild, and just her life was a total wreck. Even though she was making really good money doing movies, her life was a total wreck.
Huh.
She goes down to the Amazon, drinks some ayahuasca, and comes back and says, oh my God, my life is a total wreck, and completely changes everything about herself.
Really?
In that one ayahuasca experience. Ayahuasca has been known to heal alcoholism, to heal heroin addiction, nicotine addiction, all of that. Because what it does when you drink it, the first thing, and these are the first stages, after you get past the first stages, if you're really working with the plants the way I have, it will show you some incredible, incredible insights that are way beyond this first level that I'm going to talk about. But the first level is the inner healing. The inner working, you start to see yourself from an outside perspective. You start to really reflect on a lot of things that have been attached to you.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, some things that I went through, the loss of my mother was really affecting me. And I didn't realize how bad it was affecting me until I did this one particular ceremony and I had to confront all of this. And there was a lot of sadness in my heart, a lot of pain that I really didn't realize I was bringing in with me to the physical world, that there was something that was just, you know, a part of losing somebody. But the realization that I brought out from there is, why are we so sad? Why are we mourning people when they leave? Now, we are definitely, we miss them, and that's, you know, we should miss them, but would they want us to sit around and be sad? Would they want us to, you know, have this heaviness and this darkness in your heart and this little missing piece in your heart? Would you want that when you die for your loved ones to just sit around and just, you know, mourn you and be so sad and miserable because you're gone? No, they want you to be happy. They want you to have a happy life.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the way I would want people. I'd want people to celebrate what I've done and be happy and empower themselves. And so I realized that, why am I holding on to all this negative aspects of the loss of my mother? I should be embracing the positives. And I did. And what's weird is some of her traits actually infused with me. Her cooking abilities, for instance. I couldn't cook before. She was a fantastic cook, but I never really sat around and cooked with her.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, I started just cooking up. I'm like a gourmet chef now. I'm going, where the heck is this all coming from? So, yeah, you can't pull out like physical skills out of this ayahuasca realm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first part of the healing. I had to face some childhood trauma that happened. I still don't know what it is because my intention on working with the plant, and that's the number one thing. You have to have an intention.
Yes.
Otherwise,
intention.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's really not going to show you anything, and you're probably
not
going to
enjoy it. It'd be like strapping yourself into the cockpit of a MiG-18, not having a pilot's license, or, you know, not knowing where you're trying to get to without some kind of intention or plan.
Yeah, exactly. So my intention was to find out the inner secrets of the universe and how everything works and be connected to source and be tapped into this consciousness, this universal consciousness, this universal intelligence, and be completely wired. So I bypassed a lot of the inner healing that most people go through during ayahuasca. because my mentality is, look, I don't have time for any of this. I have a mission to do here, and I'm here to do my mission. So what happened in this experience is, in my previous ayahuasca journeys, I wasn't able to go as far as I wanted to. And I was asking myself, why am I not going as far as I want to? What's going on here? And in this one particular experience, I realized I was tethered to this box.
Yep.
And I couldn't get any further than this tether would allow me to go. And so I was able to visualize this box and see this box and this tether. And I went up to the box and I opened it up. And it's like, look, you have three very traumatic childhood things that happened to you. And the symbolism was the opening a box and then seeing these three balls, these three orbs that were sitting in the box. And I knew instinctively what they were. And I had the choice. I could sit there and I can analyze them and I can go through this and go through that. And I said, what the hell am I doing? No, I'm not. I don't need any of this. And I took a sword and just cut that tether.
Right.
And from that point, blast off. I mean, it's contact with extraterrestrials, interdimensional beings, knowledge being given to me, tapping into the God mind that Terrence McKenna talks about. Mm-hmm. And these are the more intense experiences, but there was one experience, and I don't mean to be bouncing from the level one to the level 10 here, but one experience, I saw this big pyramid with the eye and this big, it was sitting on top. Pyramid with all this Egyptian symbolism all around it, and it just tapped into my pineal and information into my pineal, and I mean it was going like a million light years a second, and I was telling it, slow down, I don't understand what you're telling me, and it was just telling me, don't worry about it, take it, you'll know what to do with it later, I mean, really intense contact with these other beings.
Right.
And then a new perspective on what symbols are, how to use symbolism. Are these symbols actually evil? The pyramid with the eye, what does that mean? That is the enlightenment. That is the body in the meditative state. That is the pineal gland awakened and aware. It's broadcasting out. It's shining light. Mm-hmm. What they've done is they've taken these symbols and they use context in order to keep you away from the power that these symbols actually have that they can endow you with, so you can be tapped in even further. Like I said, it's like trying to explain color to a blind man. You just simply can't do it. But these realizations that have come flooding in on these ayahuasca experiences are just amazing. Hitler, for instance, took the swastika, which is a sign of unity with God. It's a sign of oneness, flipped it upside down and turned it into an evil, violent sign. Now, nobody dares use this.
Right.
In anything that they're doing because of that. Same with the pyramid with the eye. The pyramid with the eye is not evil. The reason it's disconnected, though, is because they're laughing at you. They're showing you, look how we're keeping you disconnected from the knowledge. We're up here. We're holding the knowledge. It's right beyond your reach, but you're always going to stay at that base level of the pyramid unless you start seeing things for what they really are.
Mm-hmm. I got to stop too and just say, from my personal perspective, you know, my idea of spirituality that I've come to over my 37 years, is that I understand very distinctly, especially after DMT experiences, that, you know, your consciousness exists as a frequency. It never goes away. It's always out there. So when you take something like DMT and you activate your pineal gland, what you're doing chemically is you're severing your soul from your body. You're allowing your soul to go back into the ether, right? So when you do that, of course you're going to have profound experiences and understand the oneness of everything, because you're dipping your toe back into it for the first time since you've been here on this planet. And I can't imagine that it would be, you know, to me, that's like, that removed the fear of death for me. And it also allows me to approach grandparents and parents and just say very specifically, you know, you've got nothing to worry about. Just, you're going to have to trust me on it, because I know I'm not going to make you take ayahuasca, but you just have to trust me on this, that everything is going to be fine after you go through the gate. Because, you know, we've been there before, and that's nobody that's here. Even the Bible says that. Jesus says that very specifically. Nobody that's here didn't first come from heaven, and nobody who is here is going to go back there or isn't going to go back there. So, I mean, that spirituality reality, I think, exists and permeates through all kinds of cultures, no matter what you're reading, you know?
Yes. Yes. Somebody mentioned shamanism in the chat room, and mm-hmm. He said, if you're a shaman in these times, they will find you. And that's very true, because I don't call myself a shaman, but I've been taught a lot of the shaman healings in these ayahuasca journeys. Just showing, it showed me how to remove energies, how to remove parasites from the energetic body. It showed me all kinds of things. And when I go back to people like William Whitecrow and say, hey, William, this is what I saw. He just kind of chuckles and goes, well, you know, I knew you would see all this stuff. This is what we've been seeing for thousands of years now. Welcome to the club. So right. the chatter is absolutely right. You know, some of us are called for these kind of energetic works that are going on in hyperspace. See, the physical realm is a reflection of what's going on in the energetic realm. So we have wars and chaos and all kinds of struggle and strife and tribulation and everything because the background is what is off balance. There's supposed to be a balance of light and darkness. Uh-huh. This world is a training ground. We're supposed to learn. We're supposed to evolve spiritually. But there is a complete off balance of the negative and the darkness, and it's an unnatural darkness, and I've seen this unnatural darkness, and that's ultimately what we're here fighting against. We're not here to eliminate the darkness. We're here to rebalance the light and the darkness so all the souls here on this physical plane can still continue to learn what they need to learn, while at the same time we eliminate the atrocities are going on in this world that are being committed by this ultimate darkness. And the ultimate darkness, you can see it taking over in news articles that you read. And I bring up a couple of examples. An uncle, for instance, buried his niece alive. Ugh. For no reason. There was no reason, just buried her alive. And somebody happened to be walking by and saw her struggling, trying to get out of the ground, and pulled her out of the ground. But you hear about mothers putting their babies in microwaves.
Yeah.
I remember there was a recent article that came out, and the related articles were like 8 different ones where mothers are just sticking their babies in microwaves. What the heck is going on here? What's going on here is we have this unnatural darkness right now that is taking people up. Now, what's happening is we're all shifting into a higher dimensional frequency. We were in the third dimension. We're going to the fifth dimension. Fourth dimension is the two dimensions overlapping with each other. So we're very, very physical right now, but we're also experiencing experiencing intuition. We're experiencing psychic abilities. Cherie has become really, really psychic. We're very, very connected. I don't mean to be redundant for anybody that was listening to Phoenix last night, because we were talking about the exact same thing on Phoenix's show.
Oh, okay.
But, we're very tapped into each other. We're just driving down the street and I go, hey, do you want a milkshake? Yeah, how did you know? Because I can feel what you're feeling now. Mm-hmm. So this is how connected we are. And this is what the fourth dimension and fifth dimension is bringing. Manifestation, materialization. I can think about something and make something happen. Now it takes some physical work that goes along with it, but the visualization now is so much more powerful. Mm-hmm. And we can all harness these abilities and we can all change things for what they are. So the Mother Earth altogether, as well as all the souls, are all evolving into this higher frequency. That's why this unnatural darkness has come into the picture, because it wants to stop that. It actually wants to eliminate everything completely. And it's trying to take over all of the light construct here. It's trying to take over the entire matrix that we live in. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we will rebalance everything.
Man, I can't even imagine what it's going to take, though, because it seems like we are so far gone at this point. I mean, once you look at, I mean, everything, even down to the finest details, we had Elsie Vincent on talking about how they changed the frequency of music. You know, the A that we all consider to be A is not A in nature. So, I mean, every single thing that they can possibly do to disrupt us on a frequency level or a cellular level, it seems like they're trying to do it. So, I mean, how do we all collectively... what do you think is going to happen? I mean, are we going to shed a bunch of dead weight? And I don't mean to like pigeonhole people as dead weight out there, but it seems like not everybody has the hardware to get through this transition together. And I'm wondering what you think is going to happen.
There is a plan that is being put into action right now. And I don't agree with this plan whatsoever, but it's very clear to see. So when I say this, don't think that I agree with it. I'm just a... Now, the plan is to, yes, thin the herd out, and that's exactly what they're doing. Vaccines, GMOs, everything like that. Uh-huh. We are at a time now where at the tip of our fingers, we have access to all of the information that ever existed. I mean, literally, you can go to the internet and find literally anything you're looking for. So there's no reason for people to take vaccines. There's no reason for people to eat GMOs. There's no reason for any of that, except for apathy and willful ignorance. Uh-huh. And either that or they fall for the propaganda. See, that's another test too, is are you intelligent enough to pass all these tests that are in front of you? And, you know, it's sad, but the humans are being divided, and it's the dumb ones that are falling to the wayside, the sheep who are being slaughtered, and then the others who are ascending. I don't agree with doing this. I think that this needs to be something that the universe decides, not that a group of oligarchs decide,
right.
You know, in a room somewhere. But it's very clear to see what this plan is.
Yes, I completely agree with that. I think the GMO thing has a lot to do with it, actually. I was reading an article the other day that was saying that Monsanto has actually been able to patent animals after the animals had ingested some of the GMO food. And the only real way to do that would be to, you know, instill a genetic change in that animal, because how else would you be able to verify, you know, that that animal had ingested that? So I really highly recommend, if you guys haven't seen it, there's a show that was on BBC last year and the year before called Utopia. It was only on for 2 seasons. And I'm one of these people that thinks that they like to show us a lot of the agenda in mainstream entertainment and stuff like that. But they yanked this particular show off the air of BBC, and it was not anywhere near, you know, the completion of the show. It was at a pretty pivotal point in the show. But they talk about a 30-year agenda of not only using mass pandemic outbreaks, but also the inclusion of genetically modified food in the entire you know, food structure, to change it and to essentially make people not be able to reproduce. And so we look at the vaccine issues right now, and I don't think a lot of people understand just how awful some of that stuff in the vaccines really is. But, you know, if you introduce fetal tissue to a person, especially, you know, a woman, and the body reacts to that in a negative way, what do you think is going to happen every time that they become pregnant from that point forward? I mean, we've effectively sterilized people. And, man, the agenda is just so overwhelming when you really stop back and step back and look at the big picture. What do you guys, other than drinking ayahuasca, I mean, how do we prepare for this? I know you guys are big with My Patriot Supply and preparation, but is there some spiritual preparations that we can all be doing? I mean, what do you guys do in your daily life to try and handle this, you know, the overwhelming amount of negativity that's out there?
I can tell you on a personal level, the one thing that changed it all for me was getting off all pharmaceuticals of any kind. Even birth control pills for all the women out there who are like, oh, well, you know, I want to keep my periods, you know, in check. No, you got to get off all pharmaceuticals, because what they are doing is they're attacking the hypothalamus of the body. And when they attack the hypothalamus, it throws all the hormones off. If you throw the hormones off, they can't reproduce. And so people who are taking GMOs and people who are ingesting the drugs that they want you to ingest. In other words, you're going to raves and ingesting these drugs, or you're going to, you know, parties and stuff like that. You can't do those things anymore because you fall right into their hands. Mm-hmm. If you do those things.
Yeah. Even though I have nothing against MDMA and LSD, I won't do them because they're not natural.
Right. Right. What about meditation and things like that? Do you guys practice those activities?
Somewhat. Ayahuasca, it's like once you do ayahuasca, then meditation.
It's like mainlining meditation, essentially.
Yeah, just kind of pales in comparison. Right. And well, you're like,
Not only that, though, the shaman in South America say that once they do ayahuasca, at a certain point, they can just go into that state just like that at a drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. You know, if they touch someone and then they instantly know, oh, you killed somebody, or, oh, you know, something's wrong with you, you know, and they can get right into that state without anything available at all. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed I'm more intuitive, and it's like a natural drop of a hat thing. It's not a, okay, I'm going to sit here for 45 minutes and stare at the wall and close my eyes and try to meditate. No, with this new dimensional shift, it's not necessary anymore.
You know, you asked earlier, JD, what do we do and how do we restore this balance? And When I was younger, my mom used to take me to midnight mass at the church. Mm-hmm. And I always found it really comical because the priest would light the holy lights, is what they call it, the candle. And then they would pass it over from one person to another and everybody would go home and you'd see all the cars coming back from church and they're holding the holy light and like, ooh, it's the holy light. Don't let the holy light go out. Sitting back and going, oh, that's so funny. But the metaphor is very true though. See, this is what we're doing. See, we're passing the light on to each other. And then all of a sudden, everybody has their light and they're shining their light. And once the majority of people are shining their lights, which we're coming up to very, very quickly, then we start to see the balance be restored. So there's nothing really that we physically have to do. We just have to be, and we just have to continue to shine our lights, because when people come around us, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, other people's lights will start to spark within them from just being around you. Mm-hmm. And then the ones who don't have a light or who refuse to light their light, they just kind of go away and they leave your consciousness, and then they go off to, you know, wherever they're going. But, there is unfortunately a separation, and it's up to the individual to decide, where is it that you want to go? Where is your destiny taking you? Are you going to be light as a feather and float at the top, or are you going to the bottom?
That's a good question. I got to ask too, since you guys I know are involved with, I mean, we're kind of coming to this culmination of geopolitics and economics, in my opinion, and I just want to know what you guys think about this whole Shemitah year coming to an end in September, and we've got the blood moons, we've got the full moon / super moon eclipse that's going on right in the middle of the blood moons in just about 8 days. Do you feel like those types of signs are indicative of things to come? Are you looking at a time frame, you know, coming up in the next few months as something big going down?
I see 2015 to 2017 as something that is a time that's very, very important. This is the Mayan apocalypse that everybody was looking for. It wasn't on 2012. 2012 was the beginning of the new consciousness, December 21st especially. After that, oh my God, so many lights shined. But now we're going to, opinion anyways, we're going to see the real trials and tribulations. They're really going to try to bring in their... And unfortunately, things are really going to get bad, but it is the death throes of the power structure. They're going to try to go out with a bang, and that's what they're going to do. But ultimately, we will prevail. Sheree?
You know, all those people on Facebook or on Twitter back in 2008 to 2012 that said, oh, you know, I'm such a higher consciousness. You know, I dropped in at a rave one time and I just saw God.
Right.
You know, all those people, including, you know, people like me, people like Chris, people like you,
uh-huh.
We're all going to be tested now to see what we're actually made of. And that is the true test of a shaman, is whenever they are completely on their own and their entire world is shifting around them and they have to bring a planet into correction and themselves and the people around them all at the same time and all in a span of probably 3 or 4 years.
Task accepted. And let's do it. I'm ready.
Exactly. I'm ready too.
Yep.
Chris is ready. I think our listeners are ready.
Mm-hmm. We're all being called and activated.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, I was just talking to Roger Sales this morning and both of us have a really similar story to tell about joining Truth Frequency, and in that both of us have no idea how we got here, and no one could have predicted that we'd be here, part of this program, part of this team a year ago, and that all of this stuff is happening for a reason that's a lot larger than us. And, you know, we're just about out of time. So I really want to thank both of you, Sheree and Chris, for being able to come onto the program today and talk about some of this very interesting stuff. I still think inner exploration is one of those topics that everybody needs to get into, but also for just, you know, creating what you've created here to allow the universe to kind of work through you guys is, you know, it's just amazing. And I really appreciate you guys and appreciate you being here today.
Thank you for having us. It's the visualization. We visualized it back in 2009, and here we are.
The power of intention, ladies and gentlemen. And by that same power, we'll be back again live tomorrow. You guys have squandered another 2 hours listening to me yab today. But tomorrow, Xavier Hayes will be my guest, and we're going to be talking about aliens in ancient Egypt. He's written a fantastic book, and this is actually one of those topics that I'm sure we could get into with Chris and Sheree sometime as well. But appreciate you guys being here. We'll be back tomorrow. Take care, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Wherever you're at, make it TFR, guys. Bye.
Teacher, Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.